Cannon Fodder is brought to you by Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Hello and welcome to Cannon Fodder.
It's Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2019. It's cloudy and wicked humid here in Tampa.
With a Chance of Meatballs.
Oh, is that a kiddie movie reference?
It's a movie. Come on, man.
Folks, that is Brian.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
That's
here.
A book, too, isn't
and
it?
We are meatballs, so there we go.
Speak for yourself. And that is Brian Hedger, our Columbus Blue Jackets beat writer, and I'm Michael Arace, and we are reporting to you from Amalie Arena, site of game one of the first round of the playoff series between the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning. 7 o'clock comes on the air when they drop the puck. I have no idea when it comes to postseason.
I'm going to guess like 7-11.
I'm going to say 17.
7-17, that late, you think?
Yeah,
yeah. They may have like a whole electric display here. You never know, like electric show or something.
Well, as Hedge is proving, we need production help from Patrick Flaherty, who's back in Columbus, piecing this thing together. Our on-site producer is Kyle Robertson at K-Rob Photo. Adam Cairns at Atomic Photo is also here. They're going to have all kinds of stuff, including video. Kyle, you've already posted some video, haven't you? Of Tortorella's morning press conference. That'll be on dispatch.com shortly. They'll have all kinds of photo essays, which are spectacular.
They're very good.
Because we have the best in the business.
Yes.
Quite literally, Kyle is the Ohio Sports Photographer of the Year, 2 times running. And you should see him cry in those years when he loses. It's a sad thing.
All right, we're going to cut out here for just a second and hear from our sponsor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's
Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
But let's move on to brighter things, maybe. Lightning's pretty bright, I guess, and that's an awful segue, but I'll just plow on. Brian.
Nice try.
This opponent is...
They're good?
Well,
I think they're good.
This is a 1-8 seed. Jackets had to slam 7 wins in their last 8 games just to get in. Clinched in game number 81, 82, game 82, last game of the season. They won, but found out that they did not move up into the first wild card spot, which leaves them to play the number one seed, probably the best number one seed, definitely numbers wise, of this century.
Oh, easily.
Of the 21st century.
128 points. 67 wins?
62 wins.
62 wins, sorry.
Which is
more than
tied for the 95-96 wins. Detroit Red Wings for the most wins in NHL history.
Their leading scorer had 128 points, didn't he?
I believe so.
So they both ended up 128 points. Kucherov, I think, had 128, and the team did. So, you know, good luck stopping both of them, I guess, eh?
30 road wins.
30 road wins.
They had their winning percentage, points percentage, I should say, .780, and that's second only behind the 95-96 Wings. Anyway, we can go on and on with the stats. 29 come from behind wins, or whatever you want to pick. I mean, it's just...
First-rank power play, first-rank penalty kill.
340 goal scorers, first time that's happened since those Penguins teams. Really just a daunting opponent. And what will you say about the Lightning, Brian, that we haven't covered with these silly numbers?
I don't think
actually, the
much...
numbers aren't silly.
No.
They're unbelievable.
They're video game numbers. They're the kind that some kid sits in his front room and just, you know, gets really good at the video game and just puts up ridiculous numbers, and you're like, that would never happen. Like, that would never... No team would ever have that. They'd ever have a guy with 128 points.
They're like Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
The old...
It's a daunting opponent. Let's put it that way.
Not an impossible task, and we'll get to breaking down the series from a few different standpoints. But if history tells us anything, and let's just take the span of Jackets history, that time span that the franchise has been in existence, and there have been number 8 seeds to push past number 1s in the NHL playoffs. You know, despite the fact that number 1 seeds, I think the overall count of wins losses since 2001 is 27-7 in the numbers I was crunching, only 15-2 in the Eastern Conference. That said, the 2012 LA Kings won a Stanley Cup coming out of the 8th seed. The Nashville Predators of what year was that?
2 years ago, right?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
They ended up losing to the Penguins in the Cup Final.
2017, yes. They swept Chicago in the first round. You were there.
I was there. Yes, they did.
And route to the Cup, and Jeff Carter was really happy. That was, I'm conflating the Kings and the,
yes, you are.
And the Predators. But Ryan Johansson was very happy.
Let's Ryan Johansson, you know what? They may have done better. They would have done better in that Cup Final, too. Johansson got hurt.
Yeah.
He got hurt in that final and then didn't, that took out their best player at that point.
So 2012 Wings, 2017 Predators made the finals. The 2010 Montreal Canadiens were a number 8 seed that made it to the conference final. And that may be the most instructive comparison we can make because that Washington Capitals team they beat in 7, the only 8 seed to win in 7 games in right. a first round series. The Montreal Canadiens of 2010 riding a red hot Jaro Halak who came in for Carey Price in the middle of that series, won the last 3 games. About 7,000 saves, yep. And they added about 8,000 block shots, shocked the Capitals, who had 121 points going into that series, Brian.
Wow.
Not too far off these very Tampa Bay Lightnings.
Yes, and
and Montreal had 89 points that year. I mean, it was,
right.
That was seen as, that was a David Goliath as close as you could get.
Probably even more so than this situation, because you talk about the Jackets, they had 98 points.
Right.
Jackets were not a bad team at all this year. I mean, you're talking about an 8 seed, they're probably one of the better 8 seeds that you're going to see out there. They almost had 100 points this year.
They should have.
They should have had well over 100 points this year, to be honest with you. There's several games they just completely didn't show up for that I'm sure that they'd like to have a do-over on. But what you just mentioned there with that Montreal series.
Oh, you say Montreal like they say in Canada, huh? Munch.
I'm getting there.
With the Montreal.
Yeah, Montreal.
It's like the crew people, how they say Sanch.
Yes, I'm getting there. The Canadians are wearing on me. The French-Canadian influence is very strong in this sport, and it's obviously showing on me.
Bad juju, man, but please continue.
I like Tim Hortons. I can't help it. Canadian version. That Montreal series, as we were saying, is the recipe for how the Blue Jackets have to win this one.
We're going to get to that in a second. First,
right?
Yes.
Block shots and goaltending.
I plotted this whole podcast out. You have to listen to the moderator.
A little tease. We'll get into it later.
Tease. You're prattling is what you're doing.
Yes.
What I do want to ask you about before we get into 3 different contexts on how we're going to kick this series around on this podcast, it seemed clear to me, and I wanted your view of it, that coming out of game 82 to now, it's a span of a few days here, that the Jackets, among other team meetings, had one to get their talking points absolutely square.
Not even a question in my mind.
And if I had to summarize, happy to be here, excited to get the playoffs going.
Looking inward.
It's about our own being, is a direct quote from the coach the other day. We're not going to talk about how good Tampa Bay is. We don't even know who they are, really. This is about us and taking care of our own business. Is that a fair summation? There you go.
It's like them sitting there, cross-legged on a yoga mat in front of, what would you sit in front of if you're doing yoga? I don't know. Meditation. It's a meditation thing.
We'll have to ask
Kyle.
They're
looking
about that.
Inward. They're not looking across the ice at that behemoth buzzsaw, whatever you want to call them. They're looking inward.
It's mindfulness.
It's about the Blue Jackets. It's not about the other team that wears blue.
Anyway, I won't say it's striking, but it is interesting and notable that they're all saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can ask him about, hey, your penalty kill, and they'd say, it's not about their power play.
Right.
It's like,
right.
There's some hitchy stuff going on here. Okay, the last segment here. Hey, Kyle, I just said segment. That's pretty podcasty. The last part here, Brian, and I wanted to sit down and get into it a little bit with you, approaching this series from where the Blue Jackets sit from 3 different contexts. Number one, in the context of their past playoff performances. This is their third consecutive playoff appearance, and their 4th in 6 years. And, taking the last 3, 2014 Penguins in 6, 2016 Penguins in, 17, excuse me.
16-17 was the Penguins.
Yeah.
Five or six. So that's 6 games?
Yeah, I wrote down the wrong years. 16. Penguins in 6 and 16. Penguins in 5. And that was that was the...
That was the 13 one, right?
They need the team of psychologists in here.
Oh, it was?
That was... And then last year when you were here, they, of course, were up 2-0 in the second overtime of Game 3 in the Nationwide Arena. And they lost 4 in a row. So it was a 6-game series. If there's a brain muscle memory, they want to lose that memory. memory real quick, Hedge. Does that loom over them at all about it's a factor somehow, and it seems like they're consciously trying to suppress it or flush it from their system?
Well, I thought Nick Foligno said something interesting yesterday where he said, you know, they have all the, and he's right, he's not wrong. He's like, we have a lot of playoff experience. I mean, they've been to the playoffs like 3 out of the last, what, 4 years, 5 years, something like that. He goes, we don't have a lot of experience winning, you know, like the series, but we know what it takes to win because they see it on the other side of the ice every single year, what happens in different ways. I thought that was interesting that he kind of flipped it on its ear a little bit.
And well, it's kind of like walking on coals, but your feet are getting smoked every time, you know, instead of...
Yeah, well, you can see somebody walk on coals, but until you do it yourself and get across the other side...
Well, the trick is you're not supposed to get burnt.
Yeah, I don't know.
They've been blistered badly.
Yeah.
All right, it's a bad analogy. Let's move on. Right. But yeah, no, there is a conscious... I think they're not afraid to talk about it, but they don't want to go on too long about it.
True.
Which is good. It's kind of healthy, I guess.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, they know what's up. You know, they know that they need... This franchise really does need to win a playoff series, whether it's this one, whatever, but, like, you don't want to keep kicking the can down the road. They want to get this done, you know?
The city needs it. Their fans need it. And management went for it at the trade deadline to do exactly that.
Well, and that's the whole thing about... That's just, like... I don't want to say it's so Blue Jackets in context of their history overall, but here's the year where they go for it. They're just like, yeah, we got Panarin, we got Bob, we're adding Duchesne, we're doing this, we are going for it. And then what happens? They struggle after the deadline instead of, you know, going great guns, and then they end up playing this monolith that they've got in the first round. You know, like, it's just... This is the year that they're going to go for it and at least win a round, maybe two.
Monolith is the wrong word there. I think you want behemoth.
Oh, I think behemoth is good. You're right. Monolith is probably wrong.
But in any case, that
scratch that from the record.
You segued quite nicely into part two of this tripartite breakdown
it's
of their
like,
playoff.
What kind of which luck is, do you have? You, which, know, you need a little luck here.
Well,
you're not getting anywhere to start out.
Well, let's talk about this season. Let's talk about their playoff appearance in the context of this season. And a hell of a season it's been. This is one thing they do talk about all the time.
Yeah.
That they're the happiest people in the world to get these 82 games behind them. Because beginning with, probably with Artemi Panarin announcing he wasn't going to talk contract heading into last year's draft, going to reporting to camp in the Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky separate press scrums, which were crazy. Artemi, I just want everyone to love me, but I'm not going to sign here.
Yep.
And my dog's going, and Bob coming in angry.
Salty Bob.
Angry, yes. They know what I want. They know what I'm doing.
I have told them. What is it, Bob? I'm not going to tell you.
Not telling you. Does anyone know? Not really. So that's hanging on them throughout.
Yes.
It's actually, I think only now have they maybe gotten the pressure, that cloud that's hung over them, off them, just because they have to. You know what I mean? It's at a point where...
Right.
But, so there's that going on, and then they have just beginning this calendar year, starting in January, you got Bob right here in this building, in the Emily Arena, getting pulled from a game at 4-0 in late in the second period?
No, he got pulled early third.
So you were here.
Yeah, very early third. And actually...
When did you look down and notice he wasn't on the bench?
I was actually downstairs here, so
you didn't see it?
No, I didn't see it. And now, I have replayed this whole scenario in my head so many times because I was sitting in that media room across the hall.
Hardest working man in the game right here, Brian Hedger.
Sitting in the media room across the hall, and I'm on deadline, and, you know, because we have to have something filed right as the game is ending. And I've just thought so many times, God, I should have just looked up. I should have just looked up and looked in the hallway. If I would have seen him walking across, because to get to the bus, you got to walk right by the media room. I would have seen him and been like, why is he there? You know, like, what's going on? I would have seen it, and I could have, you know, but I didn't. I didn't see it because I was on deadline.
He was focused on the bus.
But anyway, to put this in context, too, I think there needs to be a little bit of context with that particular situation. And it goes back to the first game that they played against the Lightning here. They lost that one 8-0. Bob.
8-2.
I'm sorry, you're right. I always say 8-0. It is 8-2.
It could have been 10-0 or 15-0.
Lightning scored 8 goals. They scored 4 power play goals. It was a massacre, right? Bob played the entire game. There was like he was hung out to dry. and didn't play his greatest game anyway, and he had to wear it. And then, like, this is a potential unrestricted free agent, guys, pending, you know, restricted unrestricted free agent. What's that do to his goals against average? And you know, like, all that kind of stuff, you got to start thinking, is that going through his head?
In another era, that's Patrick Waugh going to the bench and yelling at Mario Tremblay.
Right. Yeah.
And then getting traded days later to the Colorado Avalanche, and the rest in Colorado is history.
Right. Well, and in, you know, John Tortorella, 2 days later when we met with them and talked, he, you know, didn't put any of the blame on Bob. You know, that was not his fault. He was hung out to dry. But here's the second time they come in, and now they're down, well, I think it was like 4-1 or something. He gives up the fourth goal, and now you yank him. You know, and I think Bob was just like, that's it. You know, like, I feel like I'm playing pretty well.
So he left the bench, team meetings.
He apparently started pulling off his gear before he even got to the locker room.
Suspended for a game. Actually, the game went. After suspension, they kept Corpy in the net in Washington, as I recall.
They had to have a team meeting, one of many this year.
Right. So
another in the locker room.
So Bob team meetings, and that was mid-January, January 10th or something like that.
All right, we're going to cut out here for just a second and hear from our sponsor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's Make It Count Rewards from Marathon. Save on gas, airfare, hotels, or support the environment. It's easy to sign up. Text JOIN to 40244 or go to makeitcount.com. Sign up today. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
And then that ushered in an era of this massive pressure, or at least this great specter of the unknown. What's going to happen to Panarin and Bobrovsky at the trade deadline?
Right. Well, I think that was...
They admitted afterwards, later, they'll admit it now, that that was a distraction. They even used the word distraction.
Sure.
Which is generally anathema to athletes.
I think to a certain extent, that was around this team this whole time. But it just got bigger then.
Yeah. They were saying, there's no problem. We're professionals.
But and you also have to remember, there were also guys, when the season started, there's guys in this team who thought that they might be able to persuade Panarin to possibly sign.
I think there's people that still believe that.
Yeah, I think that belief is starting to go away.
Dispossessed
now.
At this point.
I think it's starting to go away, and I think that's why you're starting to see a little bit of... I think you're starting to see a little bit of dissension among that top line a little bit here and there.
There's also some...
Cam is one of them. Cam put a lot of work in with Brett, you know, with Artemi Panarin, trying to just convince him, hey, look, we have a great line.
Yeah.
You're a young guy. I'm 29 years old.
This is a young team.
We have a center who's 19 or 20 years old, and he's already surpassed all of his stuff from last year. He's a true number one center that's going to be here for your entire career. Why don't you want to be here?
Yeah, you got Jones and Werenski behind
him. I think when it started to become really clear that Panarin just wants to... I don't think... If you could have traded him at the deadline, nobody's going to give you anything for him, because he came out and basically said, I want to be a free agent. I don't care where you trade me. I don't care if you trade me to the team I eventually sign with.
And then
I don't care. I want to be a free agent.
And Bobrovsky was, no, I'm not telling you which teams. I'm not giving you a list of trades. He has a no movement clause.
That one, I heard that they actually, I had heard from a really good source that this past offseason, there were, the Jackets basically went out and started seeking trades, for him. And his agent basically would shoot it down after a while.
And now he has a new agent.
No, Bob has the same agent.
Panarin has a new agent.
He's got Bob's agent now.
Package deal. So. Hello, Florida!
Who just got hired there? Joel Quenneville.
A little package deal coming, but Panarin, you all figured
also,
that out.
Panarin also played with one of their very top players, Evgeny Dadonov.
Dadonov.
He played with him in Russia, and they were just dynamic.
We got a package deal here. So. I don't think the Panthers need Panarin, but they've been after. They're hot for Bob.
If he's willing to come, are you going to say no?
So anyway, we got all this stuff heading into the trade deadline. Then they load up, and there's all this pressure now, because you look at the team, you go like, wow, that's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
And Yarmo even says it out loud, we're trying to win the cup.
Right. We're not trying to win. Nice imitation there. That was good.
Right.
You know, it's like, we're not trying to win. I think it believes what you said. We're not trying to win a playoff series. We're trying to win a cup. That's what it's about.
Because the question was formulated to him about just how important it is to win one playoff series, to get out of the first round for the first time in franchise history. He said, well, that's not our goal. Our goal is not to win one series. It's to win multiple series, win, you know, win the cup.
So heading into the deadline, there's a or about 3 weeks prior to, there's a five-game losing streak, which is sort of the great unsettled nature of the team.
Divided
bubbling
between the off period, too, right?
Yeah. It started with a home loss to Montreal in front of a sellout crowd. That was 4-1.
Yeah.
And ended on against St. Louis at home after that break in front of another sellout. And there you go. Those were the bookends of a five-game losing streak, which you're going like, all right. And then they come in, they change your team up at the deadline, and they're going for the Stanley Cup. And now they respond. They come out of the deadline, and where is it? They lose they lost 8 of their next 13 games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, under the weight of expectations.
So they're a mental mess. I mean,
yeah,
Bob
scrambled.
Bob, it's not just Bob needs
he played
a
well.
Team of psychologists. He was playing fine.
He was playing
great. He needed to loan his, although he eschews sports psychologists, but right. if they needed a team in there.
Yes.
I mean, an entire team. Because this team was addled. They were and apparently fighting and all that stuff. And team meetings start. There's more and more. Their period of discontent was about 40 days before they said that. And I date it from the middle of February,
right.
Which is where management is dated.
Through the Vancouver Summit?
Through until the Vancouver Summit, which included another awful loss to Edmonton here.
That was the linchpin one.
And then they had a two team meetings in Vancouver. It's a beautiful city.
Yes.
So two, you can do two. Let's play two in terms of team meetings. And they came out of that, and then 7-1 down the stretch, and they get the second wild card.
Yeah, I mean, it was instant.
So what I'm getting at here, and this is part two, looking at it from the context of the regular season, this was a hellish, and we didn't even mention Nick Foligno and what happened with his child.
Nope.
and who was in the hospital from...
Well, there was two separate ones with Milana, his daughter.
Yeah.
And then there was also his son ended up getting pneumonia.
Right.
And his lung actually collapsed.
Yeah. He was in ICU for weeks.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like, that poor guy, I mean, he's trying to play through that.
So these guys finally get here. They finally get in. They know they shouldn't be the number two wild card. They should be the one or third in the Metro or even second in the Metro because at points this deep into this season, all that stuff was right there for them.
It was. Absolutely.
And, you know, you go back to the calendar year of 2018, there are times you're going, like, they can win this division.
They took 3 of 4 games this season against the Capitals, who won the Metropolitan Division.
And then
they took those three games pretty easily.
They could have had a matchup against the Capitals in the first round of this.
But they
all slipped through their fingers.
How tasty would that have been?
They said, okay, we're here now. And never mind Tampa. We're here now, and we got through this, and we'll be better for it. We've been through – the way they're kind of framing it is we've been through so much playing a series against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Right.
We don't fear that.
And
they're not saying we're going to beat them, but it's like not in the grand scheme of things.
And it's just hard for me.
Plus, it's all house money hedge.
It is, but like it's just logically, if this were any other of the 15 other opponents that are
true.
Out I would say, you know what? I'd be picking the Blue Jackets to win the series. I'd be like, you know what? I think they're going to win this thing. But this team is just so stacked and so loaded. Like, it's hard for me to get my mind past that. Now,
he's a segue artist. He doesn't even know what the outline looks here. And he just segued into the third part of what we wanted to talk about before we sign off, which is let's talk about the Jackets in the context of this series against this Tampa Bay Lightning team. Can they win, Brian Hedger?
It's hockey, so that's what I'll start.
He's not the best in the business. Hockey.
It's hockey, and hockey is one of the most, if not the most, unpredictable sports out there. So the answer is yes, they can win. Do I think they will win? No. And I'm not afraid to say that. I'm not slamming them or anything. I just think that
you don't have to fear saying this.
The best regular season
team of the century can beat the Jackets.
That's what I mean. This is a machine that they're going up against on the other side that is just loaded. I mean, like I said, I didn't even realize until I started looking into this thing about how dominant they really were. 325 goals they scored this year. They only gave up, what was their goal differential? 103?
Yeah, it was.
They gave up 222 goals. I think it was 100.
Yeah, they were plus 103, the second highest mark in the last 20 years in the other one.
That's insane.
The 05-06 Senators were plus 107.
They're good at 5-on-5. They're good at power
power play. They're good at penalty kill. They have a great goalie. Where's the flaw? Like, where's the one area that they can attack? I mean, the only thing I can see is that they're not necessarily built for a physical game, like a really grinding. If the Blue Jackets come out and play what they like to call Blue Jacket hockey, right, if they can, like, force that on the Lightning, that's the only way I can see that they can kind of, you know, take this series.
There's a way. It's a very narrow path, but it's there. One of the things
that crumbs along that path.
Well, you know, someone better hope so.
I hope so.
Maybe breadcrumbs.
Yeah. Breadcrumbs.
Oh, wow. Look at that. It's unbelievable. You're redeeming yourself now. It's awful to see. But there is a way. I mean, they're going to have to, as you said, the number one is they have to push together. They have to stay out of the box.
Yep.
You've written plenty about that, and you got more to go.
Yep.
And they have to stay out of the box while asserting their physical.
Yeah.
The physical side of their game.
What a balance imposing that is, right?
And the other thing they have to do, to me, is, well, two more things. They need an unbelievable blob. So, like, you hope that Bob has snipped any number of nerves leading to his cerebral cortex to erase the fact that he is, statistically speaking, the worst number one playoff goalie of the last 20 years.
And also the best regular season goalie of that time.
Yes.
I mean, it is a dichotomy that is just ridiculous, you know? Like,
well, they need regular season Bob, and they need to somehow voice their game on the Lightning, and they need to make sure that no one's flying through the middle. And, like, one thing that bothers me, I haven't seen the Jackets trap very well this year.
Mm-mm.
I think a lot of teams have gone through the neutral zone with great alacrity against this team, and so that has to be fixed to me. But there is a path there, and it probably begins and ends with being the team that punches them in the face, because everything's been such a breeze. There's no marks on this team.
No.
It's been so easy for them.
Yep.
And this is one of those, kind of like standing up to a bully. You can push back, and how are they going to react?
The other thing is, scoring the first goal is always important in any hockey game, hockey series, whatever. I don't think it can be overstated how important it is in this series in particular. When you look at this team through the course of this season, when they did not score first, it was bad news.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, like, it's usually bad news for a team to give up the first goal. It was, like, horrendous news for this team, because they would, like, freak out, and then they would sit there and be like, okay, we gotta tie it up. And then they get loose defensively. Now you're down two goals. They get even more loose defensively. Now you're down three goals, you know?
And, of course,
Mike's pointing at a stat here that he has written down. 29 come from behind wins.
For Tampa Bay.
Yeah. Right. So, so they got you
there,
too.
That's your record.
So they got you there, too. So even when you score the first goal, they come back and they smoke you then.
I'd get a little more spiritual and talk about the same thing. No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you have to pray a little, too. But I talked.
Sacrifice talk, a chicken.
I thought Torch was very interesting this morning, because it's something I touched on in my column,
mm-hmm.
is that, and you've seen plenty of National Hockey League playoff series.
Yes.
And there are times, matter of fact, oftentimes, that a series takes on a life of its own and turns on a dime. And Torch talked a little. Kyle's going to have Tortorella's presser posted soon to dispatch.com. But this was Tortorella's walk away. And it was a question that came from Pierre LeBrun about, why is it that in the NHL and in hockey that we're seeing more, like, eight seeds upset number ones than in other sports?
Relatively, underdogs are winning.
Right. And Tortorella, and he ended this with, he was doing a lot of this morning, including at the end of this one. He said, I just think this game of hockey is such an instinctive game. It kind of rides on certain situations in each game that can turn that game into a win or a loss. You can go through all the numbers, all the things, them against us, but when you play a 60-minute hockey game and you go through the momentum swings and the surges and maybe the big plays out of someone unexpected or a lousy play from someone unexpected, that changes games. So that's why it's always up for grabs. Yeah, I thought to say goals there. You can read my writing better than I can.
Yeah.
So, as I say, guys, we just want ... They're tired of listening to the coaches. They're tired of watching the video. They're tired of that crap of a regular season and getting in here. the task is done, in other words. They want to play the game and see where we stand. And that's when they want to play the game and see where we stand.
Yep.
And you know what? That is...
good segue for us to leave.
Yeah, it is. But to me, that does capture. If you want to start about talk about the slim chance the Jackets have, when this series, we focus so hard on the Jackets, and in Tampa Bay is so good, but when this series starts to surge away from Tampa Bay, and it's going at certain points in certain games, it's going to. This is not going to be a breeze. How are they going to handle that when they get pushed around or a fluky goal bounces off someone's butt or any other part of the butt?
That's
what I'm saying, and I think that's what Tortorella was trying to convey this morning, and I agree with it.
Sure.
We'll see how this mighty team, as well as the Jackets.
There's inherent pressure there, too,
yes.
On the other way.
You're ruining my whole ending.
We
got to get out of here. We're up to 32 minutes.
All right.
You're unbelievable. You know what? We'll do a Facebook Live before the game.
All right.
And, Brian, you can yammer on that, all right?
Yes, I'll prattle on.
For Kyle Robertson and for Patrick Flaherty, wherever he is, at the Podfather, too. And Brian Hedger, our wonderful Blue Jackets beat writer. I'm Mike Arace. Thanks for joining us. And, Kyle, blow us out of here.
This episode of Cannon Fodder has been brought to you by Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Cannon Fodder is available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Cannon Fodder, your Columbus Blue Jackets podcast, is made possible by Marathon, fueling the American spirit.